as the Earth is warming up, there are people who will argue that the, quote, real cause of global warming is the sun or a natural variation in the Earth's orbit around the sun. Well, about this sun's role, I talked this week with David Hathaway. He's a PhD, and he's a leader in the solar physics group at NASA Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. And even though the last couple of years the sun had some extraordinarily strong X flares while it was supposed to be at solar minimum, the past few months the sun has behaved normally. Sunspot numbers are low as they should be, and there has been no substantial measured increase in solar energy that could be linked to this warming of the Earth, according to Dr. Hathaway. Well, what about the Earth's tilt and wobbling motion as it moves around the sun in an orbit that is not perfectly circular? I got a reality check on this from Dr. Richard Alley. He is professor of geosciences at Pennsylvania State University and University Park, and for years he has been studying the Earth's climate through ice cores while he keeps in mind the three orbital cycle variations of our Earth, which can bring the northern hemisphere either closer or further away from the sun. And here now is Professor Allen.
One is how round the orbit is about the sun. It's elliptical, but it takes about 100,000 years to go from squashed to round to squashed. Then there is a tip of the North Pole. Does it sort of lean over so that the North Pole can get a sunburn, or does it stand straight up so the North Pole can't get a sunburn? And that tip varies over about 41,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a wobble. Because the orbit is squashed rather than round, do we have Northern Hemisphere summer, which is when the bald spot on top is pointed at the sun? Do we have Northern Hemisphere summer when we're close to the sun or when we're far from the sun? And so you go from having Northern Hemisphere summer close to having it far and back over about 19 to 23,000 years. It's not perfect periodicity. There's sort of a wobble in it. So the three of these are all going on together, and these are the factors that have paced the ice ages. So the reason why we go from a world with little ice to a lot of ice and back has been these variations. When the northern land gets very little summer sun, then you can grow ice. And when the northern land gets a lot of summer sun, then you can melt ice. At the present time, we're sort of at a turning point where we'd go from having lost northern sun to switching to gaining northern sun. And so right now, not a lot of change is going on at all. The change over 10,000 to 100,000 years is fairly large, but over the time scales that we humans think of, it's not terribly big.
If we have accelerated ice melt in Greenland and Antarctica in just the last 5 to 10 years, the cause has to be what we're doing on the Earth.
It's fairly clear that the changes in Greenland and Antarctica are linked to warming in the regions that are changing. Either warming of water under ice shelves, it's melting them, that's letting things go faster, or warming on the surface. The temperatures in the polar regions reflect the global signal. So yeah, if you change CO2, it affects the poles as well as the equator. If you say that nature rolls the dice to see what the weather will be, we are making the die be loaded, and we're loading it towards warming, and then the warming comes up. But, you know, it might have come up a little warmer by itself.
Mm-hmm. But one way or the other, we're the ones contributing to the CO2 blanket around the Earth.
We are the ones that are contributing to loading the dice to make it warmer, yes.
When was the last time that Greenland did not have an ice cap?
I wish we knew the answer to that. Usual answer is that there's been ice on Greenland for 3 million years. It is just possible that it was smaller. There's fairly good evidence that it was somewhat shrunken about 120,000, 130,000 years ago. But the usual answer is about 3 million years.
Now, what about Antarctica?
Longest record so far in Antarctica, they probably pushed it past 800,000 years. It's very recently recovered. There's still analyses going on, and so the greenhouse gas record has only been published out to about 2/3 of a million years.
And in the million years, it has always had ice?
Yes.
And in the 2/3 of a million years that you've been able to look at CO2 levels in the Antarctic ice, has anything ever reached levels that we have now in our atmosphere?
No. The levels now are a bit above what nature was doing over that interval.
So for 1 million years, we haven't had this much CO2 around the Earth.
Over that time, we humans have pushed CO2 out of the band of natural variability, yes.
and it's supposed to double this century. Uh-huh. I mean, we are really in uncharted territory then.
Certainly for the times that we humans have been here and sort of modern and knowing what's going on, we are changing things past what we've experienced, yeah.
Given the fact that you haven't been able to do ice cores past two-thirds of a million years, is there any estimate about when was the last time that Antarctica did not have any ice on the land there at all?
If you go back before the Oligocene, back to the Eocene, into the Cretaceous, the time of the dinosaurs or the Cretaceous, there probably was either no ice or very little ice on Antarctica.
So you have to go back at least 65 million years.
Yeah, actually, probably only about 35 or 30, something like that. Yeah.
If at the time of the dinosaurs there was no ice on Antarctica, and it's now, isn't it 2 to 3 miles thick in some sections?
Yes.
What would have caused that much ice buildup suddenly in land that had no ice 65 million years ago?
Yeah, the best explanation actually is natural changes in carbon dioxide. Continental drift, opening of passageways between continents may have contributed as well, but the best explanation is that nature has changed carbon dioxide slowly over a long time. The dinosaurs lived on a world with a lot of carbon dioxide, and that as a consequence, it was very warm.
And we're heading in that direction again now.
We're headed in that direction, yes.
When was the last time in your ice core work that you have found this much CO2?
No one has yet gotten an ice core long enough to find CO2 levels this high. So the ice core record now goes back almost two-thirds of a million years, and the record does not record anything as high as what we have now.
So when we go to the last interglacial period, which was how long ago?
About 125,000, 130,000 years ago was the previous interglacial.
What was the CO2 level then?
Around 280. It's in that neighborhood, 280, maybe up towards 300, but not as high as today.
And you look at these numbers and where we are now, what is your reaction?
I think humans are changing the atmosphere in a way that's changing the climate.
And is it dangerous?
The question of danger really depends on what you're worried about and who you're worried about. And there have been a variety of attempts to assess how dangerous is dangerous. If you live very close to sea level in a place where you don't have a lot of bulldozers and a lot of money for building seawalls, there isn't much you can do, and it gets warmer and sea level rises, this is clearly not a good thing for you. Mm-hmm. And so there are some people that even very small changes can be dangerous to.
The estimate is 100 million people today live within 3 feet vertical rise from sea level.
There you go.
And if the projected sea level rise over the next decades is 3 feet approximately, then it means that we're going to be faced with literally global migrations away from the coastlines.
That would seem to be a reasonable presumption. If that many people are living there and the sea level comes up, they are going to have to do something.